Do you want to learn how to invest, or are you an entrepreneur and want to build companies in the regenerative food and agriculture space? Or do you work in big ag and big food and want to really move the needle? We have developed a new video course for you. Find out more on investinginregenerativeagriculture.com/course or in the show notes description below.
Welcome to the Farmer's Philosophy series, where we make time with farmers who are pushing the boundaries of regenerative agriculture. We sit down with them and explore the world of regeneration beyond soil health. We also film these episodes, so please have a look on our YouTube channel or the link below if you're interested. For now, make a cup of tea, find a comfortable place to listen, and enjoy. To make it easy for fans to support our work, we launched our membership community, and so many of you have joined us as a member. Thank you. If our work created value for you, and if you have the means, and only if you have the means, consider joining us. Find out more on gumroad.com/investinginregenag. That is gumroad.com/investinginregenag, or find the link below. Welcome on a very special day. We're super lucky with the weather. You're going to hear a lot of interesting, I'm almost ashamed to say background noise, because it's definitely not noise, a background concert. There are so many birds around us. We're going to have some special guests probably. And we're here with the bird watchers, so we're going to also hear which birds they are. But that's not the reason we're here. We're here in a beautiful farm, one of the leading ones, I think, in the Netherlands. With the second episode, depending when you're watching this, in if this ever turns into a series, of the Farmer's Philosophy series. And I'm very happy that Anna is hosting us today. We couldn't have wished for a better background. So thank you so much for a better stage, almost, to have us here today and to accept our open invitation. Like, when can we come and put two chairs in your field and chat a bit?
Yeah, great that you're here. Yeah.
So just for people to have a bit of an understanding. Of course, you can watch this on video and audio. We'll release both. But if you're only listening to this, where are we? Just to give a bit of context, what's the context around us? And try to be visually, for anybody that can see it, can definitely see it, but anybody that's listening, just to give a bit of an understanding and an idea of what we have around us.
Yeah, we're at Bodemzicht Farm, which Google still translates as bottom view, but it's really meant to be soil perspective. Out of the way. We're right to the south of the city of Nijmegen in Malden, in the east of the Netherlands. And we're at a beautiful estate, the estate of Grootstal, 20-hectare estate. And we're a tenant here of over 5 hectares. We're now sitting in a very flowery May no-dig market garden with over 150 kinds of herbs, vegetables, flowers, seeds that we sell. And we are regenerating 5 hectares here next to the forest. Now mostly epic grasslands, I would say, but we're growing it into an agroforestry system. And we're also running our layers in chicken mobiles, with our holistic plant grazing throughout the park where we set up on the land.
In terms of time context, when did you land here?
4 years ago.
Only 4 years, okay.
And this is the fourth season.
The fourth season.
You could say 3.5 years of farming on the ground.
Yeah. Wow. And what has been the biggest surprise? That you're still here, maybe? No, like, what's the...
Thankfully we made it. The biggest surprise for me, and it's still, I find it amazing, is the speed of regeneration. I've never expected to see, especially the field, because it was in a pretty degraded state, to see life return so fast, to see the soil rebounds, to see the grasses grow so tall. I remember when we were here, when we started, and I was standing in the field and I was saying to people, the grass is gonna be 1.5 meters long at least. But I didn't know that whether it would actually happen. I thought, yeah, it's gonna work. But we still needed to prove it. And yeah, now we have a field with 1.5 meter tall grasses.
Yeah, there's some great pictures. There's some great pictures you took, like the first year, second, third, and you can see the speed. And I mean, in the market garden, somehow, of course, this is very intensive.
Yeah.
In a different way than the neighbors are intensive, but this is very intensive. But I think the fields, yeah, as you mentioned, are almost a better example. Like, what's been the management on the fields, and why that surprise of the speed?
Yeah.
Like, it's chickens' impact and agroforestry where it grows too, but yeah, mostly the chicken impact, right?
Yeah, but yeah, and then the rest. So because you reason from the perspective of the grass and the soil, of the grasses and the soil. So when we started and we had if you looked at one square meter, it would be 50% of bare soil. Was super compacted. It felt actually like concrete. There was no worm. It was very sad. We did a worm count without worm with a primary school class. Searched for a worm. We found one worm in the whole afternoon, and it was tiny. So that was bad news. And it's also a challenging place for Dutch context, because it's a high sandy soil. The water level is 10 meters deep, so that's very dry for Dutch conditions. And the grass wouldn't grow taller than my shins. So it was very, that was it. And there was still a lot of poison sprayed.
What was happening? Was it used for hay?
It was used for hay, so that was good for several years. So it hadn't been plowed for a few years. That was good. But still, it was sort of mowed to the bone. Yeah, it was for cattle feed, grassland. But yeah, 50% bare soil grassland. And it was still sprayed.
Okay. Yeah. So that obviously stopped, and then what happened, or what did you bring in the ladies?
Yeah. Well, first we started with rest. Mm-hmm. Then we brought in the ladies, but we also had some lease cows that we had with another entrepreneur in this region who was managing cows. We thought, okay, we can have one cycle of cows. That will be amazing, because that will also, you know,
kickstart a lot. Yeah.
Kickstart our soil a lot. So we worked with one round of lease cows 1 year, and then our chickens running the holistic brand grazing plan. Coming back only in 50 weeks, so it's a very long cycle. Because also we are not managing for grassland, we are managing for an open forest system. Mm-hmm. So we are making very long cycles to get as much carbon quickly into the soil as we can. And
do you see that changing now? Like, is it 50 weeks and now, because of nature kicking back in, etc., that you can reduce that? Like, can you speed it up, or is the carrying capacity, like, can you have more chickens?
It depends. It always, because also management comes into practice. So yeah, we see that we can speed it up, but we also have management, for example, in the winter when we really can have these freezing temperatures, we would like to have them close so we just can take care of them if anything freezes. Or so it's not only the soil that has to be taken into account, or the rebouncing of the grasses, but also people walking their dogs here. So in certain places you don't want to be there in winter, next to the forest. And if you take that all into account, it's slightly more complex. Yeah.
And have there been other surprises on the people side? You said my biggest surprise is the speed of recovery, especially in the fields. And on the people side, I mean, many people have passed through here, I think, with courses and open days and unannounced as well. What have been surprises there?
Well, I think the most beautiful surprise is that I didn't understand that as well when I started the farm. But what I think I'm seeing is that people are... Well, in 3 years, regenerative sort of exploded, like as a...
Timing
is everything.
Timing is everything in entrepreneurship, investing,
exactly.
Everywhere.
So we were just before regenerative was something that was, going around, and people understood what was... or people had a curiosity about it, because when we started, they sort of didn't. We were just too early. But now it's completely changed. So there are so many people so curious about regeneration, and... I think, that's just amazing to see that so many, everybody wants to, well, a lot of people, not everyone yet, but a lot of people want to do something with it because it energizes them. And I think one of the biggest insights for me that I have is that I think that deep down we all feel nourished by landscapes like this, by food like this. And so what I'm seeing is that a very broad range of people somehow feel attracted to this, to come and visit our farm. So that could be investors, for example, but also multinational people who work at the multinational primary schools, scientists, policymakers, artists. Like, so that's interesting. You see that this regenerative movement has the potential to reach so many different people. And somehow, since Corona, for me, it's also very, since COVID, it's also very logic, because I think a lot of people also realize that a landscape like this, full of life, nourishes you. Like with COVID, everybody wanted to walk in the forest, not on a parking place, and not in an empty field, for a good reason, because it doesn't nourish you and it doesn't energize you. So I think one of the biggest surprises that I had is I think, hey, perhaps innate in every human being, there is this love for life that is sort of stored deep down in there. And even if you're not aware that the birds are singing right now, you feel more re-energized if you're in a surrounding where there is a lot of bird sounds around. So, yeah.
And then they walk through the gate. I mean, there's not really... There's a gate, actually. And then what is normally the reaction of people? Do you see their shoulders going down? And like, or do people... Depending on the group, maybe as well, like multinational or scientist or skeptic in general, maybe. Yeah. Like, how do people walk through the gate and then you have a coffee together and you do a tour? Of course, if they organize themselves and don't show up unannounced, which is annoying when you have to farm. But like, what's their normal journey here? Like, do you see, is there a pattern you see? Because you've had so many people on the farm here on this landscape. Is there a pattern you see? Like, okay, I know if I bring them there normally, first there and then there, then something releases or something relaxes?
Yeah, immediately. As soon as people... We're so close to the city. So people drive up here immediately when they drive out of the city.
You can literally see almost the McDonald's from the drive.
Yeah, we can see the...
That's how close we are.
Yeah. People relax. So they relax in this surrounding and I see it happen. But also, and I think that's more interesting, even they open up. So I think also this space and this lively space also helps people to open up and to talk about other things. So to talk more about values, for example, or what really motivates them, what really drives them. And a lot of people that come to visit are also, I think, searching for something. And perhaps they don't have the clarity to really formulate what they are searching for. But somehow they come here to find an answer to their search. Yeah,
they didn't write their holistic context yet, but they might in the future. But it's fascinating. I mean, that's why one of the reasons I want to do these interviews where we don't really have a script, but I'm super curious with sitting down literally on location in person, because most of the interviews we do are thanks to technology and we can interview anywhere, but to be able to sit down and ask other questions than how do we build up soil health as quickly as possible is a luxury. And sometimes it works also online. I remember one of the interviews we did with Matt Chatfield, and I'm too lazy to be farming against nature, something like that. And that somehow we clicked also online. And I still want to sit down with him in his managed forest with the sheep and just talk in general. But that will happen at some point. Matt, you might be listening. But I think the fact that you can sit between stuff that's alive instead of in front of a screen makes a big difference. Yeah. And then do you get like sort of follow-up emails then of people or phone calls of people that once they leave, then they change things? Or like, does this impact feedback between brackets reach you? Like, are there inspiring stories? Like people like, after this, it really, something clicked or something triggered and I made
did.
Exchange.
Yeah, a lot actually. Yeah, and it's also something we didn't foresee. We thought, well, we're going to start a farm. Yes, of course. And we're going to share. It's also a space. It's a learning place. So we want to help other farmers to start. We want people to see that they can eat in a different way. We also want this a place where, you know, what John D. Liu would call the tsunami of consciousness, where we somehow can help that tsunami, to make that tsunami happen. But we didn't really foresee that it would be a place where people would really come to search for personal somehow to answer to personal questions or meaning, or and that is really happening. So that was something we didn't really foresee, and now that it's happening, it's beautiful, but it also feels like a huge responsibility.
Yeah, we have it too. Sometimes people reach out and say like, oh, I'm in this space because of you, or and the work you do, and I'm like, oh, I hope you like it, because otherwise.
Yeah, like, now it's really beautiful.
But it's fascinating with the market garden and holistic plant grazing with chickens, that you have that impact. Nothing against it, but compared to, I don't know, maybe we should think, okay, you have this experience in an old-grown forest. We don't have them anymore in the Netherlands, but like a really ancient place. And no, it's a place full of life, and that is enough to trigger things, which is fascinating to see, like, how far we are away from that problem. We recognize, ooh, this is alive. Yeah. Amazing. Okay.
It feels different. Something's happening here. Yeah. And it's also because we always had the plan to make it also what in Dutch you would call a flying wheel. So a place where people meet and things kickstart, or where we can help people along. So we did have that plan always, but we didn't expect that to go this fast. And also, we literally had people here that came for a tour and that emailed me, yes, I just, you know, you gave me the kick that I needed. Now I'm farming. And that's amazing. But we also had people doing the long course who had a divorce because they wrote their holistic context. And that's huge. And that's, I mean, people gratefully thank you afterwards for it, so it's okay.
You have a moment like, okay,
yeah,
like okay, yeah, wow, okay.
So things happen because people get clarity, especially when they write a realistic context. And
so let's talk through that. What, for people that don't know, what is holistic context?
Yeah, it's something that actually we would love to have started with if we knew that would make perfect sense. So that's why we now are teaching it in that way. Like, you first write your holistic context and then you start working on your business plan, because then you have clarity. So the holistic context is basically a framework that helps you to make the right decisions for your context. And you answer several questions.
Not only the farming context, the participation, the deepness of the groundwater and all of that.
Yeah.
But
so this comes from Alan Seyfried. Yeah. But we are also, thankfully to Ethan Solovyev, we're also sort of mixing it up and making it into a version that is, we think, a little bit more accessible. So
that's one of the issues with Alan, yeah. He's great, but it's... Yeah. So accessibility is okay.
It's an important issue.
So you say even before the whole entrepreneurship piece, the business plan and all of that, what is your holistic context?
Yeah, and then we let people just inventorize what Ethan Solovyev would call the 8 forms of capital. I don't really like the word capital. I think it's more values we're talking about, but that's the
we can tell it.
Yeah,
for sure he's not happy about the word either, but yeah, it fits in the current financial context.
Yes, it makes sense as a translation term for sure. So we let people write down, where are you financially, socially, experientially, like, and then it's sort of an inventorization of your life, basically. And then we let them...
And then you're surprised that big things happen after that. Of course.
Yeah, things are happening. No, there I'm not too surprised, but for the tours, yes. So, and then we get like, they answer basically 3 questions. In what kind of world do you want to live? What kind of life do you want to lead? And what are you committed to do to get there? So if you have these sort of on paper, then you can basically start to write under your quality of life statements, the life you want to lead, your ultimate to-do list. And then, things get pretty clear.
Yeah. And many people that thought a farm, a regenerative-focused farm, was fitting there might find out that it's not. Because it might not fit. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And if people
go
out,
because that saves everybody a lot of time and resources and blood, sweat, and tears, and maybe other divorces.
Yeah, and there are also other spaces in the regenerative field where you can work. I mean, regenerative farming is never going to spread widely unless we also don't have regenerative economics and politics and a different educational system. So it makes total sense that we're not all farming, I think.
Which maybe is like an interesting answer to people that walk through the door here or through the gate and are curious, like you said, and interested, and all sort of have in their mind, okay, the only answer is me starting a farm. And then actually the context might be maybe not, or maybe we have so many other jobs to fill, and we need so many more people focusing on the food system. I think that's a general, and there is there are a lot of jobs to do. We need a lot more farmers, a lot of more hands in and around the soil, but also we need new machinery, we need new technology, we need brands, we need delivery, we need distribution,
we need all those skills and knowledge and passions to make it happen, basically. It's a paradigm change.
And then how do you, I'm not saying bring that message, but of course people figure that out by themselves, but like what would you say to people that do the long course with you and go through that holistic context with themselves? Like, what's the percentage that comes out and says, yeah, a farm is the answer for me and us mostly? I think, yeah. I imagine it must fit whatever your context socially is as well. Like, what is your guess? Is it 10%, 50, 80?
I think 20, 30%. Yeah. And then let's say, okay, I think farming is for me, and those who are actually going to start a farm might be even less. Because it needs so much commitment. Still, I mean, if you want to start a successful regenerative farm, despite current economics and rules and regulations and everything that is not made necessarily for this type of farming, yeah, you need commitment and perseverance, and that's something that an entrepreneurial drive, yeah, and that's not necessarily easy to. It's not an easy task yet. I mean, it's the most beautiful thing ever to do, but it needs serious, serious commitment. And I think a lot of people still find that quite scary to commit that much. Yeah.
And do you see roles also here, but also in general? I think you hear a lot, okay, how do we stack businesses, or how do you somehow organize it in a way that it's not all on one person, or you in this case, the general you, or like we need the regenerative farmer to be amazing at everything, apart from the spreadsheets, yep. Fundraising, growing, selling, marketing, washing, distribution, like that's a tall order, packing eggs, yeah. and making machines and fixing every, like, do you see, because here there's 20 hectares in total, you're doing 5, like, of course, the first few years you're doing everything, but do you see ways to start specialization there? And also, like, okay, there is a role for people that don't want to do everything from the start, or yeah. Maybe at the start, yes, but not everything indefinitely for 60, 70 hours a week. And that's going to lead to a lot of burnouts and divorces.
Yeah. Now, the first thing to do is to get the team on the ground. So you actually don't have to do it all yourself. I mean, that's we've also been building up a team. So we can manage that better. And the second step is, I think, in your bioregion to collaborate as well as you can with other entrepreneurs, with other amazing people that are doing things, and to also point out niches. Like, for example, hey, we can use a great composting enterprise in our region, or hey, especially processing, I see a lot of potential there to
Which
collaborate.
Which is a job. Like, that's better if that's the thing you do. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. That's something I would
rather
not do. Do you
think that the animal side of processing, or other, like when you say processing, what's your biggest need there?
Chestnuts, for example. We're going to have a lot of chestnuts in 10 years, hopefully with other farmers and food forests around. Mm-hmm. Yeah, chestnuts are amazing. I mean, we could start make chestnut flour, eat chestnut bread, chestnut pizza.
But it's nice if somebody else does it.
Yeah.
Open invitation. The next years, it's a growing business. Like, it's a gradual organic growth, but they're going to be a lot. And when they come, it's a lot.
Exactly. So it's also a scale issue always. Like, when, at what moment is it, does it make sense to combine, you know, strength because we have a scalability issue? And then, of course, you need other entrepreneurs who can help you with it. Yeah.
And we discussed it a bit off camera before, like the, is it more important, like the entrepreneur piece or the entrepreneurial skill? Do you see, what we see in the podcast and what gives me almost most hope is people with entrepreneurial experience and skill from other sectors getting very excited and hooked on soil and reaching out, like, what do we need to build? Like, how can people with experience of raising money, building teams, getting shit done, basically, from 0 to 1, like when nobody sees something and then there's a compost company or something like that. And do you get them here as well? Like, is that something that also happens in the context of Nijmegen and Bodemzicht? Or is it more like on the global context that we observe? Do you get the bouncing entrepreneurs here as well that want to start something in the space? Not necessarily maybe on the farming side, but on something else? And is that does that click with you? Like, is that fun and interesting?
Yeah, we get them certainly. Yeah, and yes, that is very interesting because I do think we need, certainly for these first reference points everywhere, we need these entrepreneurial people that can become a reference for others to start or to work at as a company. I mean, that's amazing. So we definitely get them. I do get sometimes the thing that I sometimes is a bit of a difference with the way we from like the holistic working and thinking. That's sometimes still very difficult for some of these entrepreneurs that perhaps if they come here with the mindset, okay, we need another app tech startup, or we need this, or we need that. That doesn't really necessarily facilitate life. So that's.
So what do you tell them then? Like, where do you how do you try to trigger that process with them?
Like, well, I asked him, I say I don't believe at all, and I think it's very important to say, I don't think there's an opposition between tech-focused farmers or life. Like, I think where we need to go, if you ask me what kind of world do you want to live in, I want to live in a world of abundance, full of life, because that feeds me, that nourishes me, but also I think that is the only security for us as human beings to simply exist and thrive also in the future. So I welcome all technology that facilitates that. But I do think that 9 out of 10 still things are being developed or startups are being made that not necessarily really facilitate life. And that's where the challenge lies. Like, okay, how can we actually come up with something that, that does exactly that?
Yeah. And probably in order to come up with that, you need to go through some kind of personal journey.
Yes.
And spend maybe a season here or a season on a farm, really working, really understanding. And then you will come up with things like, oh, that could be way faster, better, efficient, whatever.
Yeah, you need to be in touch.
But you need to be really, you cannot come up with this from an office somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, and I think that's, too, and that's also, it's the same story is for policy. Same story for economics. You can also not make a policy that really facilitates regenerative agriculture from an office. I do think one of the most important things is to get back in touch. I don't know if they necessarily need to be at the farm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the student or the
maybe
the
a tour
farmer.
Is, but good enough,
yeah,
or enough to
Be a loop, like to be one of the loops, perhaps that is necessary to, because honestly, if you, it's just what Charles Eisenstein is saying, right? It's like we have this culture of separation.
We lost connection.
Exactly. And we need to get back in touch, you know, like seriously, culturally back in touch. And I think
why
that's...
Why are we wearing shoes? No, like...
Yeah, and it's so fundamental that I think the question of this century might be like, how do we actually become native again? How do we have this reciprocity again? How do we feel this reciprocity, embodied experience of it with the rest of life? And that's something that's a real process. And I think it's going to take Dutch people generations. Yeah.
But do you, you say you don't necessarily have to be on the farm, but you need to be enough connected and enough, there's an element of time there. It's not that I can walk on, I do a small tour. Maybe some people after that change their life, but because that farm piece was part of a much longer journey. You were just like the last straw that, what is it, killed the horse back, something? Don't email me. And
the camel's.
The camel's back, that's the one. And but, so, of course there's no answer to that, but like there's no answer, like it's a specific answer to everybody. Like how much, like a small tour feels like not enough to reconnect with that, but it's part of that journey. And then people go home or to the office, and that's a big
that's
piece. And we were talking about policy before, like you had policymakers, which are not necessarily politicians, but policymakers here as well. What in that group, I don't know how many you had, if you can say any generalized things about it, but what's their response here? Like when they walk in here, of course, they might be part of a tour. They're sort of forced because their department is going or something like that. What happens when the people that design all the rules that basically make most of this really difficult for you walk through the gate?
Yeah.
Do they notice that disconnect with nature, that they're fundamentally disconnected, or is it really suits and ties?
No, they understand when they are here, because I can give them very specific examples for, hey, it doesn't make a lot of sense for me to to have five organizations to put my egg in a box, you know, like to deal with five organizations. It complicates things a lot. Or,
well, eggs is a very interesting, on paper at least, business to start with, because there's demand and stuff and thing. But if you have to deal with five organizations and a lot of rules.
Yeah, with five organizations and bird flu regulations, is not an interesting business line. So the I can explain them very easily, like on the ground examples. This is what I have to do. Well, this makes it very complicated. But also, for example, we now have a new subsidy system that is there to, to encourage more green measures in farming and landscape elements. You have to put your landscape elements in the RVO website overview thing. And I've went through the whole procedure, and in the end, it turns out that I'm not spraying anything organic on my plants. No, I'm not spraying at all, and that's not even a box. So there are
There's no other.
No. So there's a lot of examples that if you go quite radically ecological,
you don't fit in a box.
There's no box for you.
But you can actually not take it, which means you cannot finish the procedure, which means you're not going to get any money.
I can get a subsidy for a pig-friendly floor, but I cannot get a subsidy for
pigs outside.
So there, all the time you have the boxes that are missing, so you cannot tick a box. And of course, people, when they're here, they, if you give those examples, they realize that that doesn't necessarily facilitate this kind of farming. So I can have this conversation on the ground, but what I do notice, and that's not only with policy makers, by the way, but I notice that with a lot of people that come here, that's an interesting thing. I think it's also a little bit part of our cultural problem, and I'm speaking about the Dutch context here, because I think it's a Western civilization issue, very clearly, is that, like, because you are doing something different, people ask you to take on even more responsibility. So I get a lot of people who come here and say, hey, amazing what you're doing. Can you also not contact this person or do this work? Or instead of asking, what can I do? And somehow something went wrong with responsibility or celebrating responsibility in our culture. I mean, I think we also see it in the political field. If politicians really take on responsibility, they're not necessarily celebrated for that, or not necessarily people go out and vote for this person because they take up this responsibility. And I think it's an issue, because there's a risk that we keep being in this mindset like, yeah, we recognize the problem, but what are you gonna do? Instead of, hey, we recognize the problem, what can I do within my company, within the government, like, what can I start to do?
And that's easy, like, the system is like that, they should blah blah blah, and it doesn't translate into action.
Exactly.
Which is what we absolutely need. And I think you mentioned an example somewhere of thinking like an entrepreneur instead of acting and doing like an entrepreneur, which is a course somewhere. But that is the big difference. Like, the entrepreneur does, for good and bad, because we've seen many examples where it goes horribly wrong, but at least there's action.
Yeah.
Which means there's movement, which means there's impact, which means there could be net positive impact, could be horribly negative impact, but at least there is something, and not inaction or no movement, which is not what nature likes to do.
Yeah,
like, there's always movement.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's exactly the change we need to make. And that's also that's the personal journey. Because even if you know, I mean, rationally, if you know all the steep climate graphs, the horrible loss of life.
That horrible slide that Bart van Fresh always shows.
Social inequality, like, all entangled and growing out of control, spiraling out of control. Like, then you might know it rationally, but it doesn't mean you feel it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where the big difference comes in. We need to let this rational knowledge sink in. And then when you feel it, I think there you're going to act pretty quickly, because the urgency personally grows. And that's where the in touch, I think, is so important. Because when you start to get back in touch, you start also to get back in touch with your body and with that feeling of urgency that is not only a rational fact. And that will change everything. And you can get back in touch by being at a farm. And I mean, if you make policy on farms, please go to farms. I mean, that makes total sense.
And not just for a tour, like spend some
yes,
proper time.
Exactly.
Do some stuff.
Talk to farmers and get your, you know, like first level information. But also, you can also get back in touch in cities because there's no nature-culture divide. That's only there in our heads. But yes, there are also oyster catchers on roofs in offices. And you can actually engage with these, interact with these other beings also in the cities, also in your office. So I think that's what we need to cultivate.
So I'm taking a leap here, but for us to get back in touch with ourselves, with being part of nature, with other beings and all of that surround us, is it then better to, or have you seen, maybe you actually answered the question already at the beginning, to be in a place full of life, like here, or to really feel the damage, the suffering, to be in a place that is extremely degraded? Like go to places where the desert is encroaching, or go to, like what do you, because you see the effect here in a place that's absolutely full of life. And maybe some other people go to Greenland and see the melting ice caps or glaciers. And like, in your experience, what's like? Is it maybe more powerful to be in life? Or
I think what the powerful thing is to get out of this role of being the beholder. It doesn't matter whether you're beholding like a degraded landscape or a landscape full of life. I think the key is to interact yourself. That's what's, I think, crucial to get back in touch. And you can interact wherever, mm-hmm. Preferably in a place that you call home, where you feel at home. But to start interacting, even if it's just very small thing, like just putting a birdhouse or changing something in your garden. But the thing is, I think because of this, I also see that with a lot of people visiting, by the way, this nature-culture divide works in two ways. Like we are sort of afraid to interact. There's like a threshold almost. Like Ricardo, my partner, he loves to go into the forest wearing scissors so he can just prune while he's making a walk in the forest and enabling the trees that he sees there. You know, oh, I prune this one a little bit, that one can come up. To be the gardeners that we actually are and to start acting. And we find it very scary because we have this image of ourselves as damaging human beings, which is, of course, the sustainability paradigm. Like, okay, how do I be a less damaging human being? That's a worldview. That's a self-image that in itself is very damaging. Because if we start to understand that we can actually facilitate life, that we can make a positive social, economic, ecological impact as human beings, we also start to understand that we can do that because of interaction.
And intervention and management
exactly.
And doing things,
and
action. Yeah.
It's not a problem if you make mistakes. Like, that's where you learn from. Like, it's actually inherently part of the interaction is that you will fail in so many ways. And that's great. But you get feedback from all these other beings. And that's fantastic. If you hang up this little birdhouse and no bird is going to live in there. Okay, apparently you did something wrong. Yeah, let's put it somewhere else, or let's change it around. Hey, what's happening now? So it's all about listening. Like, how do we listen again to grasses, to birds, to frogs, and how do we cultivate the sensitivity again to listen to this feedback that we get all the time? By the way, the climate crisis is, I think, one of the biggest feedback loops we're getting at the moment. But yeah,
but you see a general response of people, and I'm imagining also people that walking through onto this farm is, yeah, let's be less damaging human beings, almost
yes.
A bit shy. And I'm imagining like a physical appearance of how can I minimize my role, or should we be here as human beings? And should we even like should we just go to Mars or go extinct and that would be better?
And it's very sad.
And it's very sad.
So sad, yeah.
And also very damaging because we've seen from many examples, like if you remove, like somehow we are, what is the term? Super keystone species. We are
exactly.
The gardeners. We are interaction. We've been doing that in a different way. And so we better learn to change that. But it's a very, sort of wishing yourself away message is very sad and very not empowering. And
it's not a perspective, basically.
No, it's basically, let's hope that we don't touch anything, don't move, don't breathe. Preferably, and then it's going to be solved, and we see especially the places that are thriving. There's a lot of human interaction, And there's a lot of other living beings interaction managed and interacted by with humans. And that's a disconnect. Yeah. Like we walk through the forest, but we don't dare to touch or move anything. Exactly. And because we don't really know. We think we're going to damage it and something is going to go wrong.
Two sides, eh?
Like from the, you could say from the hardcore agricultural side, it's like, yeah, nature and culture are so, you can never, you know, this image exists, like you can never farm because that's so-called culture with so-called nature, because these are two...
It's the word, agriculture.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Entirely different things. Also in your zoning plans, you're either nature or your agriculture. That's already very telling. And then, but it's also from the hardcore nature side, which I find very fascinating, is that it's super separated. If we are having more and more protected species arriving at our farm, which is amazing, which is why we farm. The mission of our farm is to facilitate life. So fantastic that they arrive. But I also have a problem. If these species arrive, that's the paradox, because we think that, yeah, it's nature, so that should be human exclusive gate around it, you know, it's like
and
30 meter around the badger burrow or whatever.
And the fact the fact that you're farming created the circumstances and facilitated life to come here.
Exactly.
But then the rules make sure that you cannot farm anymore to facilitate life. That then would
That's
move
not
away.
An option. Like, yeah. like it's not an no, option it's not an option for like the hardcore nature people, but also for hardcore agricultural policy. Like it's yeah.
And when people hear this and say, "Oh, that sounds hopelessly naive," I don't think that. But what is your Because you must get that question. That's naive. I'm not even going to say how you're going to feed the world, because that's not a relevant question on this podcast.
No.
And I think has been proven
many... Pretty colonial question also.
Pretty colonial question. Yeah. Newsflash, we're not feeding the world, or we're feeding the world many
Let's
times over.
Let's start feeding our community.
Let's start feeding us in general. At the event, there was an amazing answer of somebody of the food forest movement saying, yeah, my neighbors are feeding cows, like they're harvesting corn. And no soy, but some other stuff. And like we at least are feeding people. So let's start with that.
Yeah.
So we're not going there. But if people like get this look, not even saying it, but maybe get this look, that's really naive. What is your, do you have a go-to answer? Do you have a question or an invitation to them? If people like really come with this, this is all nice and funny and cute and small, but it's never going to work.
Well, the first invitation would be come and have a look how much food we produce. Insanity, like, like even quantity. We're not even talking, of course, about the quality of the food and the nutrient density of the food, which would also mean logically that if you have more nutritious food because your soil life is thriving, you also need less quantity. But you can grow an amazing amount of food here on 1500 square meters. We're growing food for 100 households and 7 restaurants, and we still have an abundance of food. So also for other beings to eat along, because I think it's super important to realize we're not only growing food for human beings. Like our community consists of humans, plants, animals, and microbes. It's all part of what
And they
people,
do eat. They come by and they know their lunches.
Yes. Yeah. And that's also, that's where the, you know,
attention.
Attention. No, it's like a relationship. It has all the colors. So sometimes it's love, sometimes it's friendship, sometimes it's, okay, we exist alongside each other, but, and sometimes you need your own space. Like all these colors are there. So I think as a regenerative farmer, you're above all a relationship manager. And what we're working towards is towards this...
The director of the orchestra.
Yeah, thriving ecosystem where everybody eats each other. But nonetheless, there is enough food for everyone because everybody eats each other. And that's the beauty of it. And what I would say to people who doubt that, I would say, how can you ever doubt millions of years of fine-tuned co-evolution as something that's not working? I mean, that's such a human-centric perspective to think that we just arrived, by the way, if you look at the scale of, how can we think that we can do anything more sophisticated than, for example, the beautiful process of photosynthesis that is so amazingly complex and fine-tuned.
We still haven't figured out exactly how it works.
No, this interaction in the soil, we were only discovering how amazingly complex it is, but also what's going on in terms of communication, nutrient transportation, healthcare, like all these things. We're only touching up on it. And what I find fascinating and also a bit worrisome is that from our cultural perspective, we keep being amazed by these things. instead of saying like how on earth could it be that trees are communicating underground, and you get, you know, these sort of newspaper headlines like, oh, trees amazing talk. Trees talk. It's like, yeah, the amazing thing is that after all these years we are still surprised by this. That is amazing.
And that we knew it, and like coming back to your point of being more native, like we forgot it very recently. Like it's not that like we didn't know, and many people still know, indigenous, like it's a very Western thing, like, oh, trees are trees. No, trees are part of a big system. You cannot even argue if there's an individual tree, probably not. And probably it's connected to everything else, and it does feel, it does talk in a very different language, but for sure we'll figure out at some point how we can listen. And then you have to somehow marry that with a spreadsheet and paying FTEs and like how does that make sense in your head? Like, how do you not get super annoyed by the current economic context where you don't get paid for quality, unfortunately? I mean, with some chefs of course you do, and starting to hopefully work with the hospital behind here, but do you get frustrated about that, like the current economic context you're in and the policy context, and like it seems basically geared to make sure this doesn't happen? And I see that with many innovators, we see that as well. Like, it's also part of their role is to change that, but it's super frustrating. Like, how do you get very frustrated, and what do you do about it, if so?
Yes.
It's going to be my question.
The good thing was, when we started this, we knew we were going to hit our head against several.
I mean, you can know it, but then doing it is different.
Yeah, it's a different thing. So the... the thing is, the translation towards Excel sheets, towards cash flow statements, towards things that you really need also to make your company work as a company, that's not so much a problem. I mean, it takes some energy to translate everything, and you compartmentalize the complexity for sure.
Literally a box in Excel.
But
it's literally.
I don't think it's such a problem to do that, to make complex things complicated, as long as you are really aware that you're doing it and that you're making that segregation for a reason, and it doesn't go at the cost of the complexity in the field. I think it's actually could be a useful tool, and we're very good at it as human beings, so I think we should also use that quality we have there. But the thing that I find frustrating about the economic situation is that if you don't exploit your workers, your human workers, but also your more than human workers all around, your soil, the community, the climate, if you don't exploit that, you will always be more expensive than a farmer who doesn't necessarily take that into account. And what I find very frustrating is that I think poison-free, artificial pesticide-free, but especially nutritious, healthy, locally grown, nurturing landscape food should be a basic human right for everyone. Everybody should have access to this kind of food.
At least enough to sustain yourself.
Yeah. That should be the basic of what we share with our communities. And what I find frustrating is that I am unable to share that because of economic barriers, because I don't want to pay anybody less than minimum wage. And the issue is that I cannot solve that. That's what I find one of the most frustrating things. Unless we get a true cost economy, I cannot bridge that gap. That's where the frustration comes in. Like, yeah, I want to do more, but I cannot do it because of other barriers.
Yeah, you're surfing the happy few, or people that have the money to pay for it, the chefs and thus the restaurants that pay attention to that, which is a very small minority, unfortunately.
Yeah,
for sure, the people in Nijmegen that would love this, but...
Yeah. That's very problematic. So what we do, we do use then solidary payments to ensure that at least some people can pay then what we call minimum, if other people pay good. Mm-hmm. And that actually works on a community level, but it's not good enough for spreading this, you know, agriculture movement, making it more widespread.
Yeah. And do you think then, do we need the other stuff to get more expensive, or this to get cheaper, like one or both sides? But what do you... somehow, I'm not saying subsidized, but paying you for ecosystem services, which is super hot, of course, in this space, or say, let's take away the subsidies on the other side and let's start make sure they pay for the the externalities or the let's say the waste in all its shapes and forms they create? Like, what do you see? What is a more facilitating life answer to this question?
It's a difficult one. I think to include the cost would be the quickest way now to go. Just so to really include the societal cost for climate crisis, water pollution, socially, loss of life, soil degradation. If you're going to include that in the potato price, yeah, then we have a very expensive potato. But then we still didn't solve the issue of people having access to proper food.
So because then the other food they're currently buying actually gets
more expensive. Yeah. So that's not only the solution. So then we also need to do a tax shift somehow to make sure that people can access this kind of food. And that's another question, like what would be most effective. I think also if you look in the Dutch situation, we started to pay so much, for example, for rent or housing or, you know, in other
energy,
fields. Yeah, it needs to level out in other fields to make it accessible for everyone. Yeah.
And do you think with the hospital next door that an angle could be, I mean, I saw what your food ate laying on the table there, but an angle could be especially the nutrient density, the health side of things, the flavor with people that are, that need it most, that are definitely mostly in the hospital because of food and because of the food they eat. Is that an angle? Because that's where we pay the costs.
Yeah.
We pay the costs as society, as healthcare system and as insurance and all of us pick up that bill. Do you think that's an angle?
I think it's a very important angle to reach a broad group of people, because I would love everybody to do this because they care about life.
Yeah.
I would love everybody to do this because they really feel how much they care about also other beings. But I'm afraid I'm afraid that most people are more motivated by the argument that concerns their own health. And that's it's also a good thing. Let's use that to spread proper awareness. And actually, also as an entry point to understand that you are yourself an ecological being and that you relate directly to soil. For example, your health relates directly to soil health. Well, that could be a beautiful entry point, not to only eat proper food, but to also start to understand how you are entangled with all these other beings.
Are you part of any early conversations, discussions there, like with the insurance that everybody always goes, then the insurance company should pay? I think it's very difficult for whatever policy reasons in Europe, but being so close to a major hospital here in the Netherlands and a university one, which usually means they're a bit more potentially edgy, let's say. Like, are there any conversations happening around that with diabetes, with specifically like easily identifiable food-related like illnesses? Is that part of your work now or the conversations that are happening, or that's simply too early, come back in a few years?
Well, we try to start that conversation in several ways, also with plans for a planetary health garden right next to the intensive care in corona times. That was also a very important perspective we were offering, but it's still pretty difficult because you also see that the hospital is pretty compartmentalized in all these different sectors. But we have some amazing people from the Green Office of the Radboud, but also an intensivist from Radboud Medical Center that is also part of our soil health quality residency. So we have a residency program for several years with artists, with policymakers, with scientists that are measuring the quality of life in the soil. And so we have some four front runners in that movement of planetary health that are connected to the farm. Also people doing research after microbial activity above and in the soil and how that relates to microbial activity in your own gut. But it's just real starting phase. It doesn't necessarily immediately translate in a budget from the hospital and a plan and that's role. But I do see it's popping up now. Now mostly because people stand up and say, hey, I want to give a planetary health course at university. But that also needs, of course, a little bit to be more embedded within the current thinking and not just a few people giving a course, but I think I see a parallel there in agriculture. There's also a few people doing it differently. Yeah, but it also needs to be more than that. And it starts with people doing it, then connecting to each other. Hey, you're also working on planetary health. And that's happening right now. But then the next step, of course, is going to be, okay, how do we actually get some real tsunami here instead of little waves? Yeah So that still needs a lot of work. Yeah.
And after these years, what's your biggest regret, if you have any? You can only describe as a success in all measurement, but for sure many lessons learned, let's say.
No,
I'm not gonna ask about lessons learned, mistakes made, which are all relevant,
all part of the journey.
That's how you can help train the next generation of farmers in the Netherlands as well. But Your regret, if you have one, or it's...
That's a really good question. My biggest regret...
But also be not starting sooner. I mean, there's many... Like, it doesn't have to be a negative regret.
Yeah,
sometimes
yeah,
sounds
yeah.
negative,
yeah.
but it doesn't... Yeah. Or not have done more,
yeah,
because
yeah.
now we see...
Yeah, no, I think that one of the mistakes we made, and I think that's also something we're still working on, is like, how do you... keep enough time continuously to regenerate yourselves. It's super important, and we're very aware of that, but it's always...
How many burnouts we have in the space, yeah.
That's it. That's like really what you don't want. And the thing is that there is a risk, and that's, of course, because we feel that urgency so strongly, there's a risk that everything is important. Because yes, it's important if a supermarket wants
essential.
To come by. And yes, it's important if a primary school wants
or
to come by.
Or a podcast maker that wants to film.
Or a podcast maker that wants to film. It's all important. But the thing is, the most important thing, of course, is your own health and your own quality of life. So we have been seeing that...
It's like, interesting when you say that. Do you feel a bit almost arrogant when you say that my own quality of life is the most important? Or as you're so connected, you know that without that...
Yeah, but then this is not working. So, and that's the interrelatedness. Like, that cannot be one or the other. It has to be both. So the thing is that, yes, because we feel such an urgency, we have so many people coming in, and that's amazing. But we also realized last year, okay, it has to be... we have to go back to our own holistic context.
Yeah, they have like criteria, like yeah. does it fit or not?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
saying no is
exactly, and
an
saying
art.
No is super important, but it's hard because because of so many things need to happen, and because you're so aware of that, we don't have the luxury to linger for years, you know. So that's always. I think if you would talk of a regret, it's not really a regret, I would say, but it's just a continuous learning process. Like, yeah, okay. Well, like now, for example, we have a free day on Monday. That's amazing.
Not because this week was in general Pentecost, but yeah, in general, a free day on Monday.
Yeah, a free day on Monday. And that's very important. And also on Tuesday, well, you are here now, which is also
sorry.
Great.
Yeah.
But no, don't be sorry for it. But usually this is the day where Ricardo and I are together at the farm and just, you know, working around, lingering, enjoying everything, taking everything up without... other people being there. And that's also for us super important.
You suggested this day. Just for the record, I'm looking at the camera.
Yeah, it's true.
You were like, the only day we can do it is Tuesday morning. So, okay.
Yeah, that's also because the rest of the week we have team running around. We have people working. So then this will be a little bit too disruptive. But yeah, it's really important. And still, I mean, for me also, like my statement of purpose is to connect. So,
but also with yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's not forget that.
No, it has all these factors. It's also connecting with my body, because I learned in the educational system where I went through to be a lot in my head, but not to really feel my body very well. But it's also to connect to place, to land, to my quality of life purpose, to my partner. And these are all very important things that you also need to, you need to sort of make space and time for that. It's super important. And yeah, we also had the main startup years is just like you're building. And now we also feel like, okay, we can shift from that building phase more towards the landing phase. And that also allows us to have a different kind of,
And not doing
weekly
something
schedule.
Is also action.
Yeah, exactly. And it's actually very important,
So I cannot let you go without asking two of the questions. I still don't know how we come up with those questions. I think Michiel Lenstra is to blame. He came up with at least one of them, I think. And John Kemp, another one. But let's ask, first of all, because you started this farm not with a huge investment, I mean, investment of time, but not capital investment, not with a huge investor or investors behind you. There was no fund that helped you set up, et cetera, et cetera. And, but what if you were one? Because you've trained and you've had many people passing through this farm, many people trained in the long courses, short courses. And I always wonder, let's say you were the agriculture bank that we needed to have in this country. And you had quite a significant investment portfolio or an investment amount ready. Let's say €1 billion, which could be a long, long, long-term investment. But it has to be an investment. It has to come back at some point with some financial return, and you can actually decide how much that should be, how much risk you want to take. Look, there's full flexibility. What would you do? What would you focus on? Would you focus on the students that came through here and they want to start somewhere, and you can say, we can just make that happen? Or maybe some kind of tech, maybe some brands, or maybe all of it. What would you do if, let's say, the money side of the investment is not necessarily the issue? What would you focus on?
I would definitely invest in life. So also in people. I really believe that that's the kind of regenerative investment we need. People who are actually doing things on the ground and making a difference. I think that's the most beautiful investment you can also do. And as an investor, I think it's also... of course, I'm not giving the official investment advice, but I think it's so nice to really connect.
So nice
when you do
the disclaimer.
Yeah, exactly. But like we need to, it's so much more than an investment. It's more of a collaboration if you know the people you're supporting and the organizations you're supporting from up close. So I think I would invest 50% of that crazy amount. It's not really my farm scale. In indigenous organizations that make a serious difference on the ground, protecting lifestyles and life in place, but especially indigenous women that are at the forefront of many battles being fought against some forms of exploitation. And the other half I would invest in agriculture. And also then, yeah, in startup farmers that want to make a real difference. So organizations like Lenteland who really make the difference by creating the opportunities for farmers to farm, because I do think we need a lot more farmers. In the Netherlands, I think we can go up to 20% of people working again on the land. It would be amazing if you talk about what kind of world you want to live in. And also helping existing farmers who cannot make the transition because they invested everything in single-use infrastructure, to help them bridge that gap, that transition gap, and help them out. So everybody who is willing to make that change basically in agriculture to support them on the ground.
And would it be... like to help, would it be flexible loans? What kind of... maybe we don't have to go down so... let's say the detailed part, but what do you see as tools or things? Have you seen tools and things like, I would just support that kind of investment, or what kind of tools would you use?
Long term, that's one of the most important things, not to ask for the return on investment in the first years.
Tomorrow, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So we need also investment portfolios, I think, to start to think more long term. Perhaps even several generations, if it's financially possible. Because that's where... So also not only from the gains, but also from the cost side. So if you realize what the huge costs are and how risky things are becoming when these ecosystems are becoming fragile, degradation coming through, not only in terms of agriculture, but also, you know, with the millions of climate migrants we're going to have around the world, water shortage, like basic existence things that are happening because of degradation. So it doesn't make any sense to invest in that. And it also doesn't make any sense to have your money stored in such fragile systems going down the drain. That kind of mentality we need, I think, for the transition to come about. Yeah,
I'm almost thinking, I wondered about that since almost the beginning when I fell into a rabbit hole of regeneration, but especially the people that have gone through places like here, or the Richard Perkins, or even Joel Salatin, and other places of where they train, and we can argue about the internship model, etc. then they leave and they find incredible difficulties to start a farm somewhere because they don't fit in the boxes of the normal agriculture banks locally, etc. But if you would ask you or others that say, okay, like, almost sit next to you when the interns leave and say, okay, which one should be back? Because you know, like, you can be the filter. Like, people like you, where good trainings are being given, you can be that filter. Like, we know, okay, who figures out the farming side, the sales side, and the spreadsheet side. And that's sort of all you need, at least to get started. But it's never going to fit a normal loan request because it's just not, okay, I take over the farm of my parents and I need some new machinery. No, this is very, very different. Could be very interesting. Also financially, and very interesting in many other cases, but somehow, yeah, we haven't really figured out how to support and then how to filter and see which one makes sense, which I think is a big opportunity. But yeah, you need to spend time on the farm. You need to spend time on the farm, sit here, listen, and see who has the entrepreneurial drive and has the learning capabilities to pick up the system or the systems needed. And then the final question, which we always love to ask. So no longer you're in charge of €1 billion, which maybe is a relief, but you do have, which maybe comes with even more scary thoughts, you do have magic power and a magic wand, which gives you one wish. So one thing you can change overnight and it will go into play tomorrow morning. What would it be?
This one I find easier than the investment question. Yeah, I think... I know that I would let everybody wake up realizing that they are themselves an ecosystem. Everybody wakes up realizing that they live in
scary breakfast for many.
Complete reciprocity with the rest of life. If everybody wakes up like that, oh my God, we can start working towards a beautiful future in whatever field you're working, because you're gonna work with such a different consciousness and humbleness towards the rest of life. And you're gonna understand that if you take care of other beings in your place and communities, that you're actually taking care of yourself, I think, yeah, then I see a very bright future.
So we might need to mix something into the evening tea of many people or the morning breakfast, or some kind of plant medicine experience. Some mushrooms here and there, just to... Or in the water, we could do that. But that would be an interesting experiment.
Could help.
It would be an interesting experiment. I want to thank you so much for... we're getting the church bells ringing for the end of the conversation, I think. And thank you so much for your time, taking the time on this precious morning to be with us and sharing some thoughts, some lessons learned, some surprises, some regrets, and some answers to magic wand and billion-dollar questions, billion-euro questions.
Great for having you here. Thanks, Koen, and for the beautiful work you do. Yeah.
Thank you so much for watching, for listening. If you're on the audio version only, you can find this video on YouTube or in the links below. This was the Farmers Philosophy series, where we sit down with leading regenerative farmers or farmers on a regenerative path and share not only about soil health, but much more than that, about life in general. What can we learn? What can we see? What can we observe when we get in touch with life again and understand we're all an ecosystem? So thank you so much for listening, watching, wherever you are, in whatever context, and hope to see you at the next one. Thank you so much for listening all the way to the end. For the show notes and links we discussed in this episode, check out our website, investinginregenerativeagriculture.com/posts. If you like this episode, why not share it with a friend or give us a rating on Apple Podcasts? That really helps. Thanks again, and see you next time.